Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Dana Hilden of the Spiritual Envoy, and today we're going to be speaking with author Sunita Patania about her book, The Transcendent Mind. And I'm going to have her pronounce her name when she comes on also so that I know I'm pronouncing it right and the listeners have it right. This is a very interesting book. It was an interesting read for me as a former therapist because she kind of talks about some of her disenchantment with traditional therapy and what it's missing in terms of the spirituality. Spirituality is often a taboo subject in therapy because it's traditional therapy has been very, she calls it Newtonian, but very cause and effect and very black and white in its nature. But the book starts off going through different history. She goes over near-death experiences, I think, to kind of explain how we do have a transcendent mind. And the transcendent mind, to me, the way she defines it, reminds me of the higher self or the God spirit or some of the other ways we've explained, you know, that different part of us. It's not the ego. It's not our humanness. It's our spiritual nature. She goes over a lot of research. She definitely did her homework. And then the second half of the book is really interesting because it talks about transcendent therapy healing, which I really liked because it actually has a workbook component to it. And it goes over the healing process from what is emotional wounding to understand wounding and how it occurs. Tools for emotional healing. So I really liked the workbook part of it. And I believe she's on air. Let me see if I can click her in here. Hello, Sunita.
Hi, Donna.
Hi, it's Dana. Pronounce your name for me, would you?
Yep, it's Sunita Patani.
Okay, I did it correctly. Wonderful. I just was introducing the book, and I really enjoyed it, Sunita. I'm a former therapist myself. I left therapy, doing therapy about 15 years ago just because I got disenchanted with all the focus on the negative.
Right.
But
I,
it seemed like a lot of people I talked to and did therapy with got really entrenched in their wounding. And I love your perspective. I introduced the book as, you know, the first half talks about kind of the near-death experiences, defining the transcendent mind. And if you would, can you talk a little bit about the title of the book and what that means to you and to the readers?
Absolutely. Sorry, Dana, have I pronounced the name correctly?
You've got it. It's Dana, yes.
It's Dana. Okay. Yeah, I mean, before I go to talk about the transcendent mind, Dana, what I'll do is I'm just going to put it into context for you. So what was basically happening was when I actually qualified as a psychotherapist, I was seeing a lot of clients for whom traditional psychotherapy wasn't working. So very similar to your experience, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And what actually happened was I started, you know, my first point was that, well, you know, maybe I'm just not very good at this. But then, you know, a lot of these people were sort of saying that we've been to other therapists as well and you know, it's not happening. So then I thought, well, maybe you don't really want to heal, perhaps. But that wasn't true in some cases either. So I started reading around, Dana, and what I found was it was actually two texts that I came across that really highlighted something quite important. So the first text was the ancient Hindu spiritual scriptures, which is the Bhagavad Gita. And in that, there was the idea put forward that there's an all-pervading consciousness, okay? And then the second text that I read was the famous A Course in Miracles. Now, in A Course in Miracles, again, it said the most profound statement, which was that there was, in fact, one mind, which was the mind of God, which was split into lots of individualized minds, which would be us as individuals. And, you know, both of these texts, I was completely blown away by this concept. So then I started to ask myself, well, you know, where can I actually go, being the skeptic in me, I suppose, to actually validate this? And that's really when I thought of near-death experiences. And at the time, I didn't actually realize that near-death experiences were, in fact, an academic field of study. And so as I started to read and research the texts, the near-death experiences, and then, of course, you know, studies in the last sort of 50 to 100 years in parapsychology, I recognized that there was a one mind, a singular consciousness, and that's what I refer to as the transcendent mind, something that, you know, we are a part of. So the transcendent mind, everything exists within the transcendent mind. You know, and a brilliant analogy that is often used is the analogy of an ocean. So if you take a droplet off an ocean, for example, the droplet still has all the same traits, the properties, the qualities of the whole ocean, but it's individual. So it's individual as well as being the ocean itself, you know? And that is the transcendent mind and us, that we are the transcendent mind, but at the same time, we're also individuals too.
Yeah, wonderful. And the probably my favorite part of your book, and I want you to definitely go into it, is it really, it is very much a self-help book in that it has what I would consider almost a workbook for healing. Would you agree with that, or would you explain it a little differently?
Yeah, I would say that with this particular book that I've written, Dana, is that I've tried to give an overview of the healing process as I understand it, you know, as I perceive it. So the first half, you've quite correctly said, looks at the idea that we are part of this transcendent mind. But the second half of the book actually looks at an overview of what I think the healing process looks like. Actually, funny you should say that, because I'm going to have another book coming out soon which actually takes the tools and puts them into very practical, you know, a practical manner to work through. But what I've done in this book is that I've outlined the four essential elements that I think make up the emotional healing process. So the first element is understanding your emotional wounding. So it's all about recognizing where you are right now and what has actually brought you here. So the idea that all of your past experiences, your, you know, everything from childhood, everything that's ever happened to you, it sometimes can create wounding within us, things that we don't process properly, emotions that we don't, you know, give regard to. You know, so it's really about understanding where your emotional wounding comes from and why it is that you're here today. Now, and I often say to people that the idea is not to get stuck on that, but at the same time, it's also essential to recognize that where it has come from. So it's just about finding the balance. And I think that's what you were saying at the beginning of this, that, you know, being a former therapist, that we sometimes have a tendency, don't we, to get stuck or to become attached to, well, I'm like this because, and this has happened to me therefore, you know. But it's really about saying, okay, this is where I am right now. Now, where am I actually going to go from here, you know? So that's the first element. Now, the second element that I talk about is the element of what is emotional healing. Now, I don't know what your experience has been, Dana, with having worked with clients in the past, but certainly with my experience, what I found was that people didn't actually have a very good understanding of what the healing process looked like. And as a result, what was happening was I was getting a lot of people coming in wanting instant answers, so to speak. And one of the biggest obstacles, of course, was that it takes time. Emotional healing, depending on what it is, can take time, and it happens in layers, you know. So I go into a good section to talk about that. And then, of course, the third element is looking at the tools. So there are a different set of tools. For example, a few of the tools that I'll look at is being authentic or really being willing and committed to wanting to change, you know. And, of course, the fourth element is looking at the idea of nutrition and how nutrition actually plays a part.
I love that you put that in there. I was watching a show on cancer, and really the role of nutrition in not just our mental viewpoint, but our physical bodies is so powerful and so overlooked. So I love that you put that in there. That's actually at the very end of the book. That's the fourth element, and I thought that it was beautiful. So very holistic of you, Sunita, very holistic.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Talk a little bit about because in a lot of ways, I think a lot of traditional therapy is in a sense been very ego-driven because it's all about the past. So talk a little bit about how the ego versus as in contrast to the transcendent mind and what the ego does in terms of healing or not healing.
Okay, first of all, what I'll say, Dana, with regard to the ego, I think over the years, the ego has got itself a bit of a bad reputation. I think that there are pros and there are cons for the ego, but it's just about finding the place of where it is that the ego sort of sits, you know, so to speak. So mm-hmm. The first thing that I would say is, well, let's just look at the ego for a minute. You know, I tend to say the most basic definition of the ego is your inability to connect with the present moment. Okay, so what that means is that when we're in the place of ego, we're either in a place of thinking about the past or thinking about the future, but we're not actually paying attention to what is happening in the present moment, you know?
Right.
Now, the thing is, we do need the ego because without the ego, I don't think we would be able to function as human beings. When we, you know, my personal belief, Dana, is that we are spiritual beings in a human body. And I think that the ego really helps to bridge the gap between the spiritualism in us and the human part of us. Okay, so I do think it's essential, but where I think the ego is misunderstood is that we tend to use in therapy, you know, we look at the ego and we look at the ego alone. So we look at the psychodynamic approach, for example, where we'll look at the past, or we'll work on behavior modification techniques, which sometimes can be looking into the future, and it's all got a place. But I think what we really need to do is to say, well, hang on, we've got this ego, but it's not the be-all and the end-all. And it's really about recognizing that, you know, we are a transcendent element as well. So there's a part of us that's eternal. It's omnipresent, you know. There's a part of us that is there all the time and connected to peace, love, joy, kindness, empathy. And it's really about tapping into that, you know, and using the ego, Dana, to actually channel that part of us through in a way that really helps to aid emotional healing.
Beautiful, yes. Talk a little bit about, I don't know how you found the story in there about John Black, but that was so moving to read that. It takes up a couple of pages in the book, and it is one of the most powerful exchanges I've ever read, and it's under the tool of forgiveness. So can you talk a little bit about that story and what forgiveness provides in healing?
Absolutely. You know, Dana, that is one of my favorite stories. And I think sometimes, you know, we learn so beautifully, don't we, through stories, because they mm-hmm. just, especially when they're true, and this one's amazing. And this story actually illustrates, before I go into it, illustrates the power of forgiveness. And not only does it do that, I think it makes the reader really question, you know, the extent to which the forgiveness has really taken place. So in this story, this story is actually written by a man called Tom Hudgens. Now, Tom was 9 years old when his sister, who was 22 at the time, was raped and murdered by a gentleman named John Black. Now, I think they changed his name for confidentiality reasons. But so Tom, as he was growing up, had a lot of resentment, understandably, towards John. And 30 years later, Dana, Tom decided to go to a meditation retreat. And as he started to meditate, he, you know, came across a voice on the inside which said that, you know, Tom, you can forgive him. And Tom actually decided to take this advice, and he actually decided to, you know, take the journey of trying to forgive John Black. So the process took a year in terms of for them to meet up, because John was actually serving a life sentence at the time. I think it was in a Texas prison, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And it was the most remarkable story, because it took a year, and, you know, a year later they came face to face, and they actually spoke to one another about, you know, so Tom told John about his sister and about sort of character that she was. And now here's the interesting thing. John said that he was never, you know, if you looked at his record, he never had a criminal record before. He doesn't know what came over him when he when he committed this particular crime. But I tell you what it did for him. He became the person in prison who would carry a Bible and who would become the strength for others in prison. So he, and he will say, he said, you know, he said, Tom, there's a part of your sister that, that lives on within me, because it's, I know that, you know, my actions have affected people greatly, you know, my family, your family, and it was, it's, you know, almost unforgivable what it is that I've, what I've done. But what the whole process actually did to him, it completely turned his character around. And through the meeting, both John and Tom were able to forgive one another, and a really, really immense healing took place between the two. So it was a beautiful story.
Wonderful. And I really liked the part where he asked him, what were you thinking? And I think as people, we always say, gosh, what drives you to do what you did? And the reality is he wasn't thinking. You know, there was just no consciousness there. And that's important for us to understand, you know. But and it brings us back to the forgiveness. But this story is beautiful because it's, forgiveness, I believe, is an internal process, but he made it an external process as well.
Absolutely. And I think also, Dana, you know, what I often say to people or anybody that reads the book really is, you know, really look at that example and ask yourself how it makes you feel that, that Tom has managed to forgive what we would label a perpetrator. Because it's amazing within us, you know, the judgments and the notions that we hold. And, you know, it really makes us question that, you know, I'm not for 1 minute saying that the action that, that John committed was right, because obviously it wasn't. It was very, very wrong. But having said that, you know, it's amazing what it takes of us to really go that one step further and say, you know what, I'm going to have a go at forgiving this person, because maybe through love, people can change.
Definitely. So, Janita, tell us how we can get your book.
Yep, the book is available on Amazon in the US. So if you just type in The Transcendent Mind, you should be able to get a copy. I think it's also available in Barnes & Noble as well. So you should be able to get a copy in from those bookstores.
Perfect. Okay, let's get back to the book. Now, and I also, I appreciated your humanity in talking about a little bit about your own story of your eating disorder, and you got the reality of people judging you by how you looked. And I think that's such a powerful empathic tool, that we are who we are, and yet if our body changes, all of a sudden we're judged as being something other than what we really are. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think the biggest lesson, you know, Dana, that I learned from that, and actually I'll always say to people, and I talk about this in the book as well, I talk about the idea that we have internal dichotomies, that, you know, no matter what it is that happens, there's always a light and a dark side to everything. So for me, that whole experience was, the dark side to it was the struggle with, you know, the food that you have, and the struggle with what it does to your body. But on the flip side, the light side to that was, it really taught me how to respect and love myself on a different level altogether, that it was okay, you know, for me to just be me. And I think that's really the key, that when people do suffer with, you know, with eating disorders, a lot of it, you know, a lot of the healing process really starts with self-acceptance, really, Dana, that no matter, you know, what's going on with you, no matter what size you are, no matter what issues you're having with the food, it really does come with self-acceptance, saying to yourself, well, it did with me, saying to myself, do you know, I don't like necessarily where I am, but I'm willing to accept where I am. Because I think that until we accept ourselves where we are in the moment, it can actually be difficult to open up to greater change. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that's transcending the ego. It's being in the moment, appreciating who you are, in spite of, you know, all our wrinkles or our extra weight or our being too thin, whatever our issue is, just being able to transcend that is powerful.
This is it.
Now, talk about a little bit about the tool of expressing our, on that note, expressing our authenticity and what that's about.
Well, you know, I think, Dana, expressing our authenticity is really about learning how to, number one, be comfortable with ourselves, and then secondly, mm-hmm. actually expressing, you know, who we truly are. I mean, I think one of the greatest gifts of humanity is that we're very unique and individual. You know, so it's amazing because on one side we're deeply interconnected, which is highlighted by the fact that we are part of this transcendent mind. But on the other side, we have such beautiful, unique traits and, you know, unique things to us. And being authentic is really about learning how to express, really express that part of ourselves that, you know, what is it that you love to do? And quite often people come in and they'll say, Sunitra, I don't know what it means to be authentic. It's been so long that I don't even know anymore what the authentic me is. And I'll sort mm-hmm. of say to people, well, look, really have a think about, you know, when you were a child, what did you like to do? What's your natural character? You know, is your natural character quiet? Is it playful? You know, are you into dancing or baking or painting or football or whatever it is, you know, or soccer, I think you call it in the US. Whatever it is. And start to actually express some of those traits that are so very naturally you. You know, think about the roles that you're playing in life and then ask yourself, well, okay, so I'm playing this role, and yes, I do have this role, but I'm, you know, I have an authentic self underneath, and it's okay for me to be that. So that's what I'd say.
Yes, beautiful. And that I always think that, like, children know, they know what they want to be when they grow up. They have this vision, and a lot of times we as parents kind of get in there and put these expectations on them or, you know, what they should be. And you talk a lot about that in your book in different people's stories. That, you know, they may have a good job and they're very successful, but they're not happy.
Yeah. I mean, there was one particular story in there. And, you know, I had to change all the names, obviously, for confidentiality reasons.
Right.
But I know that there was one story in there about a girl who was very, very intelligent. And, in fact, she became a tax inspector here in the U.S. Because, you know, it was expected of her. It was a very well-paid job, but she was absolutely miserable. And as a result, she went on to, you know, suffer with depression. She, again, developed, put on lots of weight because her relationship with food was sort of compensating for it. And it took her a long time to actually say, you know, I'm not happy doing this, and actually I want to be doing something different. And I think she went back and she actually went into the field of education and setting up a business for herself. So, you know, this idea of what it is that we're told to do and how we're brought up, authenticity is really, really about tapping in to who you really are. What is it that you really want to be doing? And, you know, if possible, being brave enough and courageous enough to actually take the steps.
Absolutely. And I think that one of my favorite points you made about authenticity is the uniqueness of each of us. Because I think a lot of the New Age, a lot of the metaphysical stuff out there is talking about how we're all one, and we really are part of something bigger, but we're very unique, and that's
absolutely,
you know, powerful.
You know, Dana, I'm so glad you brought that up, actually, because you're very right when you say that, and I think the key to inner happiness and a successful living is actually, again, it comes back to this idea of dichotomies and paradoxes that, you know, it's not that we're one or the other. We're not just unique and we're not just one, but we're actually a combination. We're both one and unique at the same point. And you're quite right. I think in the metaphysical world, there's a lot of teaching out there to suggest that, you know, we're all one and we should be living like this or we should be doing like this. And I just think, well, hang on a minute. You know, bring it right down to where you are here today, you know, and really, where am I here today? I'm a soul, I'm a physical body, I have a mind. If you're all three of those, Dana, then all three of those parts of you need to be nurtured in the correct way, you know? And sometimes what can happen when we have a look at the metaphysical path is we tend to go very much towards the soul, and we tend to go very much towards you know, this is the right thing to do and nurture our souls. And sometimes we actually forget to nurture the physical parts of ourselves because we're still here having a human experience. And it's about learning how to integrate the whole of ourselves into where we are.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And the section on nutrition, and you mentioned, and I have not heard a lot of people talk about this, but I experienced it through my own children. One of my son, actually, if he eats sugar, he becomes very angry. And you mentioned that in your, and I don't think people realize how weird, how food can trigger us so differently in our moods and emotions.
Absolutely. And, you know, you're very right when you say that. I think I actually have a case study in there. I had somebody who would have sugar and then become very angry. And it's interesting because when you look at a lot of people that focus on nutrition, they tend to focus on just nutrition, and sometimes they don't give the psychological element any regard, you know. So it is literally about, no case is the same, everybody is different, and it's really about bringing together all these three elements and looking at how it is that they're affecting you.
Absolutely, and you individually, and even the books on nutrition, everything's different, everybody's unique. So I think going back to appreciating what your own body, spirit, mind combination needs is very powerful, and the book guides you through that. And I'm happy to hear you're doing another book, because I think the workbook part of it was my most favorite. So that's, you know, there's a lot of books out there about spirituality and near-death experiences, but they don't actually bring it back home in terms of telling us how to apply that in our day-to-day life.
Yeah, and I think that's the most important, isn't it? Because that's how you actually change. That's where the change sort of comes about. So, yeah, I hear exactly what you're saying, and that's exactly what the next book is actually designed to do.
Wonderful. And you even have the sentence in there, there is no single method to attain healing. So it's unique to every individual. So, again, the title of the book is The Transcendent Mind, The Missing Piece in Emotional Well-Being, and I love that you spelt peace as in P-E-A-C-E. It's beautiful. Let's see here. Now, tell me a little, I know you started off with The Course in Miracles. I just have to ask you, did you find The Course in Miracles confusing at all?
I found it
very
dense to read.
I
found it was very heavy, wasn't it? Literally.
Yes.
There was
literally
a lot going on in the book. It was very heavy. I didn't actually, you know, Dana, I didn't find it as confusing, but I found it very, it was a difficult read at times. You know, you really had to concentrate with what it was trying to say at the time. I think the message is beautiful, and I'm not sure whether you read, but in the back of the book, you know, they have a guide for psychotherapists as well, which was really interesting to read.
Long. You have that, it's in the Course in Miracles, or you did that?
It's in A Course of Miracles. Yeah, it's in the I can't remember. It's got like a supplementary section in the back. So I found it really interesting to read that view, you know, A Course in Miracles view. But I can understand what you're saying, because it was a heavy, heavy read. a good one, but a heavy one.
I actually found it a little bit tautological, but that's a whole other thing. I like what you took from it and what you've evolved through, because I think we're all evolving. I think I'm sure Helen, the author of that, had evolved too through the years. But you found a way of taking those very heady concepts and putting them in a very practical format. So I really appreciate that about the book.
Thank you.
Now, Smita, we have just one more minute. So say the title of your book again and tell us where we can find it.
Yep. So the title of the book is The Transcendent Mind, The Missing Piece, that's P-E-A-C-E, in Emotional Well-Being. You can get a copy on Amazon or Barnes & Noble in the U.S. You can also, if you have time, guys, visit the website www.sunitapatani.com. It is actually currently under construction. It will be up and ready in about 2 or 3 days' time. And there's actually a free video, three-part video series that you can download, which will help you to really put these things into practice. So, yeah, keep an eye out for that.
Beautiful. Well, thank you very much for joining me today, and I wish you all the success on the book, and
definitely would love to interview you on your next book when it comes out.
Thanks very much, Dana. It's been an absolute pleasure being on the show.
You're welcome. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.